This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is Illegal Curve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
By law, we cannot do an NHL season preview show without speaking to our good friend Eric Dehatchik from The Athletic. So that's who joins us on the line. Eric, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us as always.
Yeah, always my pleasure.
Eric, we're obviously sitting here, you know, 4 days away from the start of the regular season, and, you know, the NHL season is always fascinating because nobody would have predicted, of course, that the St. Louis Blues, dead last in the NHL, would have ended up lifting Lord Stanley's Cup at the when it was all said and done. But as we sit here, you know, 4 days away from the start, and I look at the Western Conference and I look at, you know, the various teams in the Western Conference, is it as wide open to you as it is to me, where you can make an argument for really any number of five, six, seven teams eventually being the Western Conference champion?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I'm pretty sure when we had this conversation last year, even though I'm based in Calgary, I probably didn't confidently predict that the Calgary Flames would have 107 points, and that would be the top total in the Western Conference. It was the top total by 7 points. I mean, in a sort of a parity-driven league, to win by seven ahead of Nashville at 100, and San Jose, of course, had 101. That's actually a bit of a gap, and no, I didn't see them coming, and I think that if we talk again at the end of April, it'll be like, really? You know, Dallas? Really? Colorado? But I do think that if you look at the improvements and the changes that certain teams have made in the Central, for example, you know, Dallas finished fourth last year, Colorado finished fifth. In my mind, I'm picking them as the 1-2 teams, although I do think that the Central could be tightly grouped, and the gap between the top and the bottom, I don't think is going to be, you know, very great at all. But I just think that in terms of those two specific teams, the moves that they made, and even it's more of an attitude and approach. Like I think Colorado internally feels that they are ready to take that great leap forward, and I think that a lot of the moves that they made in the offseason are designed to do that. I mean, you know, trading Tyson Barry is a risk. Absolutely a risk. I mean, he was a tremendous power play quarterback on that team, but I think they feel with Makar coming and Samuel Girard there to play with Eric Johnson on the second power play, they are in a position to replace him. And of course, they have to get Rantanen signed, which I think they will eventually. I mean, if he's out until December 1st or November 30th or not playing at all, that will throw a massive wrinkle into their plans. But I like their team, and I guess partly it's because they took Calgary out in 5 games in the playoffs last year, and I thought they were a little bit unlucky to get eliminated when they did. After watching them dismantle Calgary, I thought, you know what, they could win the cup. So that is the kind of, you know, of era we're in, you know, where, you know, traditional powerhouses don't exist. You know, I think Tampa was the one team last year that separated itself from everyone else in the standings. And, you know, I'm going to guess that they're going to come back to the pack a little bit this year, still be really good. But, you know, who knows? It's a coin flip. And if you did know, and you had a trip to Vegas planned at some point in the hockey season, then good luck to you, because it's really tough to pick a winner this year.
Eric, you wrote about the Arizona Coyotes for your Athletic notebook yesterday, and I thought, you know, it was really interesting what you said or wrote about what Rick Tocchet said to you, Coyotes head coach, of course, writing about, you know, how you really need to have six solid defensemen in today's NHL, and the Coyotes do have a pretty good group of defensemen. Obviously, Phil Kessel was the big acquisition for the Coyotes, and you even write in your notebook that you're not sure if, you know, acquiring Kessel and having more depth and, you know, having Antti Raanta and Jacob Chychrun healthy, if that's going to be enough. But is that one of the more fascinating teams to you? Because the Coyotes are one of those teams where, you know, we've been waiting for so many years for them to take that next step and get back into the playoffs.
No, I mean, it's a great question, and yes, all those things are true. I mean, if you watched Arizona in the finals, I mean, they got behind the eight ball early, and they just couldn't recover last year. If you watched them in the final third of the season, they were a very tough out. You know, they were here. I saw them play a handful of games, and they, with all of the injuries they had really key pieces missing, including, you know, their starting goaltender. They got great, you know, goaltending from Darcy Kemper. A lot of players really stepped up, like Brad Richardson might have had one of the most underrated, under the radar, good seasons of any role player in NHL history. They were just really good and hard to play against, and you knew, you know, you had a tough night against them, and I just think that their skill level has improved this year, and Ranta, I don't, they think is going to be like a top 5 to 7 goalie in the National Hockey League, so we'll see if that's true. But you know, when you do what Arizona did, which is, you know, deliberately take 2 steps backwards and you know, put a bunch of young players in the lineup, you know, at some point, you know, you absorb the body blows, and then organizationally have to decide, okay, we just can't keep doing this. Let's step up and see what, you know, what we're made of. So I like some of the moves that they made. I mean, Kessel is one of those guys. I mean, he's polarizing. He's challenging for people. I think part of it is he's challenging for people in the media to deal with. You know, he doesn't want to participate in any formal interviews. He doesn't like to talk about himself. He's not really comfortable even in one-on-ones if you're trying to do like a light view of his life. He just wants to play hockey. And I think that that's the one thing about relocating in Arizona that he's going to be able to do. Like, he was never comfortable in Boston, never comfortable in Toronto. I don't think ever comfortable in Pittsburgh. You know, he's the type of guy that, you know, he's never going to be fired out of a cannon for every single shift, you know. So as a coach, you know, you better not think that you're the one that's going to change his stripes, because he's not. You know, he is who he is. But I do think that Rick Tocchet, because of his, you know, personal history with Kessel in Pittsburgh, knows exactly what he's getting with him and can push the right buttons. That, to me, is the key with Phil Kessel, push the right buttons. So he seemed to think that the fit was really good, and that's what the one thing that they lacked. And all of the things that they did well last year, they just couldn't find a way to break open tight games. And they just feel that Kessel, as much with his playmaking as his finishing, is a guy that can really help them do that. Like, he's just flat out, you know, there's very few teams that are sitting there with their 1 to 12 forward group, and they make a change, and the guy they bring in slots in right at the top of the list, and then everybody else drops down one place, and then, you know, you're probably more in the role that you're suited to, rather than having to play up the lineup when you're not really capable of doing it.
You know, Eric, here in Winnipeg, we have a tendency to call the Jets the Finnipeg because of all the Finnish players. Over in Calgary, it's the Swedish Mafia, and one player in particular caught my eye is Elias Lindholm. You obviously just wrote about him for The Athletic. And he's just an interesting player from the perspective of, you know, he had 6 NHL seasons, but you saw the jump he had in production, you know, 78 points after his ceiling was 45. So what was it about his transition to Calgary from Carolina that really allowed him to have that comfort? And was the fact that there were a number of Swedish guys in and around the team, you know, making it a little bit easier for him to transition to the city?
Yeah, no, yes, that was certainly part of it. You know, like you talked to Michael Backlund. Michael Backlund is kind of like the dad figure for all of the Swedish players here. So Rasmus Andersson comes in and you know, and Backlund befriends him. You know, Lindholm comes in. You know, Backlund was telling me that he didn't really know Lindholm that well because it's just a younger guy, but he made sure that he was welcome. So in the same, like, you know, I mean, Giordano makes everybody feel welcome. He is that kind of an all-inclusive sort of a captain, but even within that Swedish community, they, you know, they all cluster together. You know, I mean, they'll tell you privately. I mean, it's because, you know, when they're with each other, they can speak the language, you know. So when they're in North America, they're speaking their second language. They're all excellent English speakers, but there's a comfort level to be able to, you know, go out to dinner and just speak Swedish, because the minute a North American player is there, they, you know, they are very gracious and they speak English. So you know, comfort in a market, I think, is part of it. I think the fact that, you know, Calgary is different than Carolina, a real hockey market. Everybody here cares. I think that gave him energy. I think, you know, playing with Gaudreau and Monahan, obviously two extremely skilled players. But the one thing that he said to me that, you know, maybe I buried it in the story a little bit, was that, you know, he really liked consistently playing on a line with two guys. And the thing about Carolina, was that they moved him up and down the lineup. And this is sort of the curse of being someone known as for their versatility, because he is a guy that was drafted as a center, can play center, very good face-off man. But in terms of where Calgary needed him last year, that, you know, they just hadn't been able to find somebody to play on that top line since Hudler's heyday, and he was tremendous there. And, you know, if you look at the fan base here in Calgary, you know, when Bill Peters mentioned that he would like to, you know, go back to experimenting with Lindholm and trying him at center and moving pieces around, everyone was like, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And of course they weren't able to do it because they didn't have Tkachuk signed until just a couple of days ago. And so I think that's a blessing in disguise, because just from talking to Lindholm, you know, that's where he wants to play. Like, you know, I get that everybody in Winnipeg wants to play with Scheifele and Wheeler, and the same is true in Calgary. You know, why wouldn't you want to play with Gaudreau and Monahan? But it's just such a good fit. Sometimes it's better just to leave well enough alone.
Eric Dehatchik is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's part of our season preview show. Eric covers the NHL for TheAthletic.com. He joins us to preview the Western Conference. Eric, I look at the Chicago Blackhawks as having made one of the sneaky best signings in all of free agency when they acquired Robin Lehner. They signed Robin Lehner, ex of the New York Islanders. Getting Lehner in net, assuming he's healthy, and getting him in net for 55 games, as opposed to having to go with guys like, you know, Cam Ward and Colin Delia, no disrespect to those guys, of course, what does that mean for the Blackhawks' playoff chances?
You know, the Chicago is a really tough team for me to slot, because I look at those, again, those teams in the Central, I'm sort of in the midst of a column on this, that the hardest thing to do is not necessarily to pick the team that will win the division, but to pick the team that will lose the division. So, you know, if you flip the standings upside down, and we're talking today, you know, who are we going to pick to finish last? Because somebody's going to finish last. That's the one thing that, you know, fans, you know, especially fans, you know, of a specific team don't ever want to consider. Like, would you have, at the start of last year, been able to predict that Los Angeles finished last? No, they were like a middle-of-the-pack team that was coming off a 98-point playoff season. They plunged, right? Minnesota finished last in the Central. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming. They were a 106-point team 2 years ago. Even New Jersey, they'd made that step forward, and then they slipped back. So obviously there were injuries and in some cases, you know, internal turmoil that contributed to that. So that's a long preamble to me looking at the Central, the 1-7-team division left in hockey, and trying to pick the last place team. And I put Chicago there. And it's largely because I think that everybody else is better. So you're right. I think that if Robin Lehner can go in and play at the same high level that he played last year with the New York Islanders, that will really make the difference, because I think that their goaltending was their Achilles heel. You know, they have an attachment to Corey Crawford because he was so important for them when they were winning championships. I think, you know, he's well liked by the, you know, the Taves and the Canes and the holdover guys from those glory years. But it just looks like, you know, all of the wear and tear over the years has taken its toll on him. So yes, I, you know, to me, you know, they have some nice young pieces. You know, Dylan Strome, I think, has to prove that he is for real, and that he, you know, the strides that he made last year after he came over in the trade from Arizona are legit, and that he's, you know, he can produce, you know, top two-line points. You know, DeBrincat had a tremendous breakout season. You know, he needs to do that again. And, you know, and Patrick Kane, you know, looked like he drank from the fountain of youth and bounced back to becoming an absolute elite players. So, you know, if there's any regression at all among those top players, and if the goaltending is just a little bit better than last year, but not a lot better, then, I mean, you got to pick somebody to finish last, and I'm going to pick Chicago to finish last.
Eric, we can't not do a Western Conference preview and not ask you about the Dallas Stars, because obviously they were one game away from going to the Western Conference Final, and who knows, they might have gone all the way to the Stanley Cup Final. And when you bring in Joe Pavelski and you bring in Corey Perry and Andre Sekera, the expectations are obviously going to be higher than they were last year. So I'm not going to ask you whether or not you think they're going to be a playoff team or if you think they can even be a Stanley Cup contender, but I wanted to specifically ask you about Jamie Benn. With the acquisition of Joe Pavelski, is the person that's going to benefit the most from that maybe Jamie Benn? Because as you know, he had a down year last year and his offensive numbers weren't where we expected them to be.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think there's an awful lot of people that, you know, at the end of the year thought, Jamie Benn, 53 points, really, that's all? You know, for a player that is making the kind of dollars that he is, for the role that he has on the team as the team captain. And you know, I think partly it was because, you know, they kind of broke up the big line at different times last year to get better balance. And it didn't seem to hurt Sagan, who had his 80, and you know, Radulov, I thought, out of, you know, again, he was on my fantasy team, so I was very happy to see 72 points in 70 games from Alexander Radulov. And I do think that, you know, to your point, I mean, when you bring in a Joe Pavelski, you brought in another top six forward. So now you have real balance rather than, you know, hope and a prayer balance, which is, you know, what I think they had last year. And, you know, they think, you know, like a lot of people think, that, you know, Rupe Hintz is capable of playing up. And really, they liked, you know, they liked a lot of what they saw from Jason Dickinson last year. So we'll see, you know, where he fits in. But yes, I do like their team. And you know, so much of it is dependent upon Ben Bishop's health. But I think that if you look at Bishop when he was healthy, I mean, you know, he has, you know, the scoring's up, right? Scoring's up in the National Hockey League. He was under 2 for his goals against average. And 9.34 save percentage that he produced last year is dead puck era stats. And we don't see those anymore, not even from the elite goaltenders. So to me, Bishop was in a class by himself as a goaltender last year, or you know, one or two other guys in there, but not many. So I think he's the best goaltender in the National Hockey League at the moment. And so if he can stay healthy and if he continue to play at the level that he played at last year, then I think I love what Dallas is doing. I mean, Heiskanen is going to be a year older, hopefully be a bit more comfortable, probably can assume more of a role. You know, they were limited to like 45 games I think it was, how many did Klingberg play? Somewhere in the low 60s, I think. And but he was a guy that when he was absent from the lineup was missed. I think he's one of the best power play quarterbacks in the league. I think he has a chance with that team this year to be the top scoring defenseman in the National Hockey League. So yeah, lots of good pieces there. Lots of good pieces and a team that seems to be trending in the right direction. The message from the general manager is, okay, we think we have a chance to win. And so let's see. Let's see where it goes. But I do, I like I said at the start of our conversation, Colorado and Dallas are the two teams that I quite like in the Central. And I do think they have a, you know, both have a legitimate chance to finish atop the Central.
You know, Eric, prior to yesterday when the Jets announced the Patrick Laine news, there wasn't a lot of good news in terms of signings, but mid part of this month, they did sign Josh Morrissey to an 8-year extension. Now, he's a player, of course, based out of Calgary, so you probably have a lot of familiarity. You wrote about him on September 9th. What did you learn doing a deep dive on Josh Morrissey, something that Jets fans may not know about?
Well, like when I sat down with Josh, I pulled out the, you know, like the NHL guide, and I said, okay, let's go right from, you know, the time that you were 10, right? And all the way through, you know, and then the minor hockey associations he played in, you know, it was like the Springbank, the next association over from where my son played in Trails West. So we probably crossed paths at some point, when they were like 10 or something like mm-hmm. that. And then, you know, and I talked to Dave Manson, his coach in PA about him. And then the one thing that kept coming back, like, you talk to Josh Morrissey, everyone in Winnipeg, you know, listens to his interviews and can see what a thoughtful young man he is. You know, the one thing that Dave Manson said to me that I thought was really interesting was he said, you know, like he's a cerebral player. You can see that. He says, but you don't always see the competitive fires. And he said, this guy, when playing junior, especially with, you know, in his early junior years where people would take a run at him, he said, it would just galvanize him. It would make him more competitive. If somebody went after him, you know, he would wait until that player is 45 or 50 seconds into a shift and he would go after him and he would embarrass him. He said, this kid has that hidden competitive streak that you don't sort of see bubble to the surface like you do with some players. Like some players, it just goes off them like heat off of the sun. But with Morrissey, you don't see it. But he says, it's there. It is absolutely there. And if you coach him, he says, you realize it. So I think that, you know, like he's just one of those, like he's just the perfect modern NHL player. You know, he can defend, he can score, you know, you can play him in all situations. I mean, you know, he'll, especially depending on the uncertainty with Dustin Byfuglien. I mean, how many minutes is he going to play at night, you know, this year? I mean, he's going to have to play 25, you know, 26. I mean, his minutes are going to be very, very high. And, you know, he's a good piece. You know, the biggest problem in Winnipeg is that, you know, again, you don't know where things stand with Dustin Byfuglien. You have to assume that at some point between now and, you know, the next week or so, they'll get Kyle Connor and into the lineup, and then they'll be much closer to the team that, you know, that gave Nashville a run at the top of the division. But I do think, you know, just with all of the departures on defense, there's an awful lot of people that think that the Jets could go backwards a little bit. And I have to say, I put myself in that group. I think they're in the mix for a playoff spot. But last year, I would have said, I mean, I don't think there's any question they're going to make the playoffs. I'm just going to give them a playoff spot, and then it's just a matter of, you know, how deep you go in the postseason. And this year, I do think that, you know, based on the way the rest of the conference is shaping up, it could be a fight until the end.
Last question for you, Eric. Eric Dehatchik of The Athletic is our guest on the program. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. You know what the question's going to be. Your Western Conference champion, your Eastern Conference champion, and then, of course, your Stanley Cup champion.
Well, I think, because we have these picks coming out in The Athletic in the next little while, I still think Tampa, you know, just, I mean, the gap between, you know, 128-point Tampa and 107-point Boston was pretty great. I think Tampa's coming back to the pack. I think some of the, you know, like, I don't think Kucherov is going to score that many points again. You know, he'll have a good year, but he'll be at 100 points. But I think that they are a really good team. They're the best team in the East. And so I think they probably learned a little bit from last year's playoffs. I'm picking them to come out of the East. And I picked Dallas to come out of the West. Again, you know, it's going to be really close. You know, Vegas is a good team. Calgary is a good team. San Jose is a good team. Nashville continues to have a good team. There's a whole bunch of really good teams. We haven't even talked about St. Louis, right? I'm going to say Dallas. I like the goaltending. I like the moves that they've made. I like the urgency that they're feeling organizationally, and I think they're going to put it all together.
Without a money back guarantee, though, right?
No, absolutely not. I say this to, you know, people who comment on my stories on the website. You know, you do the best you can in terms of making educated guesses, and sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong. I went back and looked at last year's previews, and I picked Boston and San Jose to play in the Stanley Cup final in September. So that's like getting the silver medal and the bronze medal instead of, you know, an Olympic competition, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're close, but you didn't get the gold medal winner, which was St. Louis, and we would have, I would have had to have a lot of kicks at the cat to have picked St. Louis in September. Remember, I picked them in the playoffs because they made the same sort of, you know, four or five changes that Calgary did. I know I said that both those teams are going to be better, but I didn't think that they would be that much better. And they were. And, you know, in St. Louis, took them a half a year to sort it out. But in the end, they sorted it out pretty well and did something that hadn't been done before in the National Hockey League. So you just don't know, you know. Can you imagine if you'd been in Vegas on January 20 or 9th or 10th or whatever, and you'd had too many drinks, and you saw, you know, St. Louis had 100-1 on the board, and $10, you know, 100-1, and then, you know, going down and cash a ticket in June, that would have been pretty good. Right?
That it would have. Eric Dehatchik of TheAthletic.com. Eric, we always appreciate you joining us to talk about the Western Conference and as part of our season preview spectacular. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right, my pleasure, guys.
Take care, Eric. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the Pacific Division. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg. We continue our look around the NHL a few days ahead of the start of the season. Of course, one final exhibition game tomorrow afternoon. You can hear it live on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets in St. Paul to meet the Wild. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality homes style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall.
Drew, I wonder what Aaron would think if I brought in my mustard packets. into the deli, like bringing in an outside condiment?
You're probably not allowed to bring in outside condiments.
Especially considering I would imagine he has mustard. Right.
I would think he does have a wide array of mustards, and you continue to eat the mustard packets throughout the course of this entire show.
No, it's not a bad little snack. Like, you know, all joking aside, obviously,
no,
you know, Marky Letestu is eating the mustard to reduce cramping, but I'm just starting to kind of like this as a nice little snack during the show.
Wow, we've reached a new low is basically what's happened at this point in time.
He isn't digging through the garbage looking if there's any leftovers, so we haven't hit the new low.
Give us about 50 minutes.
Andrew, I don't know what you're talking about. Like the last 10 years, I mean, I've already gone below ground low, so there's you can't go any lower. I don't mean I was dead. I mean, that's how low I was. So.
You're probably not too far off. Let's look at the Pacific Division. We've already decided, based on the fact that each of us has five teams coming from the Central, that the Pacific Division will continue to be one of the weak sisters in the NHL.
It'll be better this year, though.
It'll be better this year, I think, because Arizona is likely to be a better team, assuming that Antti Raanta can stay healthy. But you look at the bad teams in the Pacific Division, and there's a number of bad teams in that Pacific Division. The Calgary Flames won the division. They won the West last year with 107 points, and their big addition was Cam Talbot to help solidify their goaltending. I don't know that that's going to be the solution after they were really run out of the rink by the Colorado Avalanche in that first round matchup. San Jose and Vegas were also the other two playoff teams out of the Pacific last season. How do you see the division shaking out so far in this upcoming season there, Ezzy?
Yeah, I don't think that the Pacific is as bad as the bottom of the Atlantic division, right? Like you're talking about Ottawa and Detroit, even though I think Detroit is going to be a very exciting team to watch. The Pacific is clearly not as good as the Central, I'll say that much, but you know, I think the Oilers are going to be closer to a playoff spot than some people think. And I realize that, you know, they haven't done anything earth-shattering, right? Like, the Oilers and the Flames, they swap backup goaltenders, right? And I think Mike Smith is probably going to play more games than some people think, because Koskinen, I don't think you can just pencil in for 50 to 60 starts. But when you're talking about James Neal for Milan Lucic, I mean, clearly the Oilers won that trade. I think, especially if James Neal, guys, is playing with Connor McDavid, I could easily see Neal getting back to 25 to 30 goals. You forget that Neal was a perennial 20-goal scorer. How many seasons in a row did he have 20? 10? I mean, so Neal, I think, is going to add a little bit offensively to the Edmonton Oilers.
I've never understood that trade from Calgary's perspective. I mean, if anybody was going to be...
It's one bad contract for another.
I know, but if anybody was more likely to be a reclamation, it was going to be James Neal rather than Milan Lucic. They just took on a albatross of a contract, and what can you... I mean, Neal can still score. I'd be surprised, to your point, Ezzy, if Neal doesn't bounce back with between 15 and 20. Lucic can't...
Or more. I mean, if you're playing with McDavid, I mean, who knows?
Lucic can't do much of anything at this point in his career.
Well, no, Neal's a better player than Lucic and has been for quite some time. I mean, Milan Lucic's best years are well behind him, but right. You know, hopefully, you know, he just finds himself in a better situation. I wouldn't expect to see Lucic in a top six role. That's why I think it works a little bit better there, because I think Lucic was forced into a second line role just because the Oilers didn't have any other better players, right? So the Oilers, I just expect to be better just simply because they can't be as bad as they were last year. But, you know, to me, the Flames are, I think, due for a little bit of a regression. And when you talk about, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights and the San Jose Sharks, I mean, those two teams to me are still the best two teams in the Pacific Division, in the Western Conference. And yeah, sure, you're going to lose some offense with Joe Pavelski. And, you know, I thought they might bring in Patrick Marleau just to kind of solidify the bottom six, but you've just got so many talented players there. I mean, we know Kevin LeBanc is going to be motivated to have a good season after signing that $1 million deal. And, you know, the same cast of characters is still there. Timo Meier, I think, is going to have another great season. And, you know, obviously, you know, Logan Couture is the captain now. You know what you're going to get out of Logan Couture, just a consistent offensive player. And hopefully Erik Karlsson is going to be healthy for the whole season. And if he is, look out, because when you're able to put out Erik Karlsson, Brent Burns, and Mark-Edward Vlasic basically the whole game, that's very dangerous. So I think the Sharks and the Golden Knights I've penciled in. And, you know, I think the Coyotes are probably going to be the team. If the Flames don't make the playoffs, the Coyotes are going to be the team that probably gets in there in place of the Flames. And I realize that, you know, most of us have five teams coming from the Central. I do as well. And I think there are going to be three teams coming from the Pacific. So for me, I think I'm going with the Coyotes, and it's quite simply because I think if they're healthy And we don't know if they're going to be healthy, but, you know, Antti Raanta was really good before he went down. Darcy Kuemper was one of the best stories of the year, mm-hmm. one of the best, you know, second halves of the season when it comes to goaltenders, along with Jordan Binnington. So, you know, the Pacific, even though it's not as good as the Central, I guess in a roundabout way, Drew, a long-winded answer, I think it's going to be a very unpredictable year. So I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be fun to watch.
You don't have Calgary making the playoffs.
I don't.
Dave?
A huge drop. I still think Calgary makes it. I think that they've still got a very talented team. I mean, they were a 50-win team last year. I don't see them dropping sufficiently. Now, to Ezzie's point, and this is a bit of a hedge, and like Eric said, you know, you tend to kind of reflectively look back at these things. I'm doing that now in the midst of our conversation. You know, I could be convinced, because I liked Arizona last year, I could be convinced, but obviously due to injury they fell off, that Arizona is a fourth team from the Pacific. I've got Calgary, San Jose, and Vegas. I think Arizona is that bubble team. I think they're putting it together. I think health, obviously, I mean, that's real.
They're real insightful there. Yeah, that health is going to matter.
Right. But I think for them, you know, we saw last year what the health, did to them and how it pushed them back. So to me, if Arizona maintains their health, if Phil Kessel kind of is, you know, has the anonymity that he requires in Glendale and is able to just play his game, and that team takes that next step with a lot of that young talent, I could see Arizona pushing in and taking maybe a four spot, because I don't see Calgary, San Jose, or Vegas missing. So I would have to have Arizona push their way in. If they push their way in, then yeah, I guess obviously one of the five teams I had from the Central would be pushed out. But from my perspective, Arizona has to put a lot of things together, and they're on their way to doing it, and I really like Tocchet as a coach. But again, I don't think that they're the same level as Calgary, San Jose, bless you, or Vegas.
I would agree with you. I mean, I think that Arizona is knocking on the door. I'm not sure that they're ready to knock off one of those teams. I think San Jose's, the absences that are leaving San Jose, the guys like Donskoy, the guys like Pavelski, are going to matter more than people think. So I think San Jose is going to take a bit of a step back. But my three teams continue to be San Jose, Vegas, and I still think Calgary mm-hmm. is still going to be a playoff team. There's too much talent up front and on the back end, and it'll make up for the lack of goaltending there. Sure. So those are my three teams out of the Pacific.
The one team I would also throw in there that we haven't even mentioned is Vancouver. And I realize that, you know, some people are higher on the Canucks than others, but you look at the moves they made, and we know those moves. You know, you bring in JT Miller, you bring in, you know, Tyler Myers, Michael Ferland, I think, is going to have a really good season there. I mean, Elias Pettersson, you know, coming off of the Rookie of the Year award, Brock Besser signed. I mean, they're going to be able to move the puck from the back end better. You know, the goaltending was very underrated there with Jacob Markstrom. I think Thatcher Demko is a good candidate to play, you know, somewhere around 15 to 20 games. So you've got good, solid goaltending there. So I think Vancouver is going to be good. I don't think they're going to be a 90-point team or a 95-point team, but overall, I just think the division is going to be more competitive. That's why I think a team like the Calgary Flames, and you forget, guys, I mean, the Flames were able to beat up on teams like the Canucks and the Oilers and the Coyotes last year. That's all I'm saying, Dave. I mean, I could be wrong. The Flames could easily finish somewhere between, you know, 95 and 105 points and, you know, end up finishing first or second in the division. I just think, you know, overall, the division is going to be tougher this year.
Well, I think your prediction of Calgary to miss the playoffs is so far the boldest of all the playoff predictions that we've talked about. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. One word answer, is Los Angeles the worst team in the NHL?
No.
Not worse than Ottawa?
No, I think Ottawa will probably finish last. I think they're going to be exciting to watch. They have a lot of good, young, exciting players like Brady Tkachuk and Thomas Chabot, Colin White, and others. But, you know, Eric Brandstrom is a guy that I'm going to be very excited to watch as well, Dave. But yeah, you saw him play in the American Hockey League last year for Chicago. But I'm going to have to say Ottawa. But, I mean, LA is going to be bottom five.
When we come back, we shift our focus to the Eastern Conference. We start with the Atlantic Division, home, of course, of the Tampa Bay Lightning, the juggernaut Lightning, at least regular season juggernaut. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going division by division, team by team, previewing the upcoming 2019-20 NHL season. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Alongside Dave Minuch and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We continue our look now with the Atlantic Division, where, of course, the Tampa Bay Lightning were the runaway juggernaut of the regular season, 62 wins, 128 points, all leading to zero playoff wins, getting swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets in one of the most stunning upsets in recent NHL history. You look at this Lightning team, and they've added, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk and Patrick Maroon. They've subtracted from their roster, losing JT Miller and Anton Strahlman as the biggest names. This Tampa Bay Lightning team, I think everyone would agree, is still one of the best teams, if not the best team in the Atlantic
Division. No, they're the best. I mean, on paper and in the regular season, they should be the best.
Then why is this year different than last year when it comes to the playoffs?
Don't have the answer. I really don't. Because that was, you know, in all our years of doing the show, and we're actually approaching 11 years, if you can believe that they've let us stay on, Racks let us stay on the air this long. But when you're talking about the Lightning, I mean, how many weaknesses are there? I mean, there just aren't that many weaknesses. Like, Kevin Shattenkirk, Drew, is going to be a third-pairing defenseman.
Yeah.
Kevin Shattenkirk. I mean, Kevin Shattenkirk a few years ago was a prized acquisition by the New York Rangers. And I realized that, you know, he fell out of favor there, and they brought in Jacob Trouba, so they just couldn't afford to pay Jacob Trouba and Kevin Shattenkirk. But when you're able to put Shattenkirk out on the third pair, that's how deep you are, right? Anthony Cirelli, I think, is probably the best third-line center in the entire league. Right. And just look at his analytics. Like, the guy is, he's only getting better too. Right. And you just like, everybody knows who they have that is elite. I mean, Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, Andrei Vasilevsky. Those are elite players. But when you're talking about the supporting cast, Alex Killorn, Tyler Johnson, Yanni Gourde, I mean, Matthew Joseph, I mean, they just, you go up and down the roster. Ryan McDonagh, He got Norris Trophy votes last year. I realize Victor Hedman is the Lightning's top defenseman, but Ryan McDonagh is a top shutdown defenseman in the league, right? So, I mean, they're just so deep. Curtis McElhinney, great acquisition, great backup goaltender for Carolina. Like, find me a weakness on that Lightning team. I'm not saying that they're going to have 128 points this year, but they're probably going to be around 110, 115 at least.
And the interesting thing to me about Tampa is, you know, last year we talked about at the trade deadline how they didn't make any moves. They didn't want to mess up the chemistry. And then when, of course, they got knocked out, we had a segment about
should they have made a move? Were they too comfortable?
Which is easy for us to do in hindsight. But, you know, that would be, to me, would be an interesting thing because I could, again, to Ezzie's point, if you look at this team, you don't see a lot of weaknesses. And one, did they learn from what they did wrong? I mean, of course, you know, the odds of them playing Columbus again in the first round, especially with how Columbus is configured this year, isn't that significant. But having said that, you know, you have to be able to adjust. I mean, even though you don't have the same team composition, you have generally the same team, you have to be able to handle what teams did to you last year and be able to adjust and evolve and be able to show that you can learn from that. So to me, it's twofold. One, do they make any changes to add to their lineup, add to their depth? So they need to make those changes in the playoffs, they can. And two, are they able to adapt? But I mean, again, to Ezzie's point, and he just went over it, this is, in my mind, the best team in the East.
You look at the Atlantic Division last year, and there were three teams that made the playoffs, the Lightning, the Bruins, and the Leafs. And then there were the five teams that didn't. Montreal got close. They fell a few points shy. Florida, of course, made the big acquisition this offseason, getting Bobrovsky, although I think Anton Strahlman is also going to be very helpful on that blue line in Florida. Buffalo, Detroit, Ottawa. We know Detroit and Ottawa are going to be aren't ready to make that jump. And Buffalo, of course, is a team. They added a lot of players, a lot of NHL talent to their roster. Marcus Johansson, Colin Miller, Jimmy Vesey, and Joki Haru from the Chicago Blackhawks, who we mentioned before. You know, how is the Atlantic going to play out? I mean, it looks like, I mean, Tampa Bay, Boston, and Toronto are pretty much, you know, marked in as playoff teams. And then there's a potential battle with three teams for either one or two more spots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about it earlier. I mean, the Atlantic is very good at the top and horrible at the bottom, right? Detroit's not making the playoffs. Ottawa's not making the playoffs. I mean, Florida, I do have as a playoff team. And I think just having Sergei Bobrovsky, similar to the Chicago Blackhawks, you bring in Bobrovsky, who, I don't care what anybody says, is a top 10 goalie in the NHL.
He's a top 5 goalie in the NHL.
Probably a top 5 goalie. Yeah. Look what he did in the playoffs. You just mentioned Columbus's sweep of Tampa Bay. Bobrovsky was a huge part of that.
Yeah.
Obviously, Panarin, Duchesne, and others were a huge part of that. But Florida, you know, you have Vincent Trocheck healthy the whole year. They probably make the playoffs. Anton Strahlman, I'm glad you brought up, because Strahlman, I think, is one of the most underrated defensemen in the league. Look at his ability, you know, his goals against, his possession numbers, expected goals against, and all that. Strahlman is an excellent defensive defenseman. He's going to fit in really nice there in the top four. I think Ekblad's going to have a better year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about Barkov and Trocheck up the middle. I mean, I expect a guy like Henrik Borgstrom to be a very sneaky good rookie for the Florida Panthers. So there's a lot of depth there.
How many wins is Joel Quenneville as their head coach worth on his own? I mean, yeah. Quenneville as behind your bench is probably worth 3 to 5 wins, you know, at minimum.
You have to think that this puts Florida into at least the fourth spot in the Atlantic.
I would think so. I think Florida is a better team now than Montreal is.
Carey Price is still Carey Price.
Yeah, but Sergei Bobrovsky is, I mean, you know, you can certainly make an argument for which one of the two goaltenders is better, but I think the supporting cast in Florida now it exceeds the supporting cast in Montreal.
No, but, you know, I agree with what both of you are saying. I mean, I think Florida this year will be better than Montreal, but I think Florida and Montreal are going to be those bubble playoff teams because I think they're still not quite in the conversation of, like, Boston, Tampa Bay, Toronto, like that division. That's why when we were comparing the Central Division to the Atlantic, mm-hmm. I think the Central's better, but it's close mm-hmm. because when you look at the top, like if you take the top teams in the Atlantic, Boston, Tampa Bay, and Toronto, and then you compare those to the top teams in the Central, which would be, you know, Winnipeg, Nashville, Dallas, Colorado, St. Louis. I mean, they're it's not as clear cut in the Central who the top teams are going to be. It's pretty close. I think it's more so the bottom teams. Like if you compared the Minnesota Wild, you know, to the Ottawa Senators, that's kind of where the Central really kind of tips it in the Central's favor.
So 3, 4, or 5 teams making the playoffs from the Atlantic, and who are they?
Yeah, I have 4. I mean, we talked about the big 3, Boston, Tampa Bay, Toronto, and then I've got Florida making the playoffs. I think, you know, they only missed it by 10 points last year, and they had all types of injuries, and so I think their top line, Huberto, Barkov, Dadonov, I mean, it's one of the top lines in the league, and I think Bobrovsky's going to have a great year. So I can't see Florida missing the playoffs unless they have a bunch of injuries.
David, same question.
Well, I mean, 3 are a lock in Tampa, Boston, Toronto. To me, it's a toss-up between Montreal and Florida. I think those two will be dueling it out the entire season for that 4 spot, but I'm not prepared to pick at this point, unless I have to.
You have to.
You know what, Drew? Just put Montreal slash Florida there.
No, he doesn't get any slashes.
Yeah, fine. I'll be a Canadian. I'm going Montreal.
Okay. And then I will say I have 5 teams actually coming out of the Atlantic Whoa. Division, going a little bit off the board. I have Boston, Tampa Bay, and Toronto, no question. Florida. I think Buffalo is going to be a playoff team this year. I think the addition of Ralph Kruger behind the bench, I like the moves that they made in adding professional hockey players to their young roster. I think Buffalo sneaks up on some teams, and they're going to be a 5th team to come out of the Atlantic Division.
The Colin Miller trade was one of the sneaky good moves of the summer.
Marcus
Colin Miller
Johansson is a sneaky good player too.
Yeah, he was good for Boston on that third line.
I think that Buffalo is nobody's talking about them. I do have them as a playoff team as well. So you guys each have 4. I have the 5th team coming from the Atlantic. When we come back, we're going to talk to Kevin Allen of USA Today. He's going to tell us his thoughts about the upcoming Eastern Conference season in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are For the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From USA Today, he covers the NHL. He's a good friend of our program. Kevin Allen joins us. Kevin, good morning, and thanks so much for doing this.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, I can't have our season preview show without having you on to talk about the NHL's Eastern Conference. So let's get right into it. Obviously, the Tampa Bay Lightning were a regular season juggernaut, the likes of which we haven't seen for a number of years. But when it came to playoff time, they had one of the most stunning collapses, the likes of which we haven't seen in many years. Why is this season different for the Tampa Bay Lightning, both in the regular season? Do you think there's going to be any lingering impact to the collapse that we saw against the Columbus Blue Jackets?
Well, you know, I'm sure they're worried a little bit about it because usually that's a psychological issue. But I think for the most part, the NHL players have kind of learned that the NHL players are just such a different animal, and momentum and injuries and everything plays a part. And I think they all understand that there's no connection between this season and the previous season, and you just got to hope that you're mentally ready and well off in terms of injuries when you enter into the playoffs. So I don't think there will be. And, they're still an incredibly talented team, and I think they do know a lot about winning. And the goaltender is, Vasilevskiy is only going to be better. He's a year older, a year wiser. So I think they're still, the top team in the East in terms of talent and in terms of the ability to, be the dangerous team to beat in that conference.
Kevin, the New Jersey Devils were obviously one of the more active teams in the offseason, and also drafting Jack Hughes first overall. They were kind of the center of the hockey world for a while there. And even, you go through the moves in Nikita Gusev, they gave him a $4.5 million contract, even though, he hasn't done much at the NHL level. In fact, he hasn't played in the NHL yet, but the expectations are obviously much higher there. PK Subban is brought in, and, have they done enough, though, to be a playoff team in your mind?
Well, I love what the Devils have done. I really do, and I think Shiro's done a great job. But, that's a very difficult division to make hay in right now. I think, most of those teams in that division got better. So, I think I've said, for the last month that I think every team in that division has a shot at making the playoffs. But that also means that every team has a shot not to make the playoffs. And, I just don't know that the Devils have, I like their talent level, but, have they come together as a team? Do they have all the elements? Is the goaltending going to be good enough? I can't answer those questions. So when I sort it out in terms of my confidence level, I have them out of the playoffs. I think that's possible they could get in because, that division is so tight. That it's almost impossible to predict. But if I had to guess, I guess they're going to be on the outside looking in. But, I like where they're headed. And I think this is a very important time for them. I think, the key for them, in my opinion, is getting Taylor Hall signed long term. If they do that, this is a team that's really, in my mind, setting itself up with the drafting of Jack Hughes as being good for a very long time. I really like the Subban acquisition. I think he's going to add a lot to their offense and give it a lot of zest.
Kevin, before the Austin Matthews news came out, there were a lot of people expecting him to be named the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Do you think he still gets named captain of the Leafs, or do you think he was on course to be named the captain of the Leafs?
Well, I thought he was, but, I think most general managers, struggle with the question of whether, you take the young superstar and make him the captain or the veteran. I mean, if you look at it logically, John Tavares is the guy. He should be the guy. He's been around. He always says and does the right thing. And if they weren't going in that direction, I would guess they are now. Because I think, with the issue that Matthews had in Arizona when, in a late night confrontation with a security guard, he behaved badly. I think it sort of shows that basically illustrates what all GMs are afraid of, that a younger player is more prone to making poor decisions and can put the team in a bad light. And I think that's exactly what Matthews did. I mean, there's just no way to exonerate him. And you certainly can't say, he's just a young guy. And for that reason, I think Tavares will be the captain.
Kevin Allen of USA Today is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. We're previewing the NHL's Eastern Conference. Kevin, we talked about the Florida Panthers last segment, and there was some consensus in this room that the acquisition of Anton Strahlman is almost a sneaky good one as the acquisition of Sergei Bobrovsky. How do you see the Florida Panthers season playing out? Is this a team that's ready to return to the playoffs, considering you add Strahlman, Bobrovsky, and, of course, Joel Quenneville behind the bench?
Yeah, I mean, I like this team quite a bit. And what I like best is Bobrovsky and Joel Quenneville. And I like the Strahlman. I'm a Strahlman believer. But, his best days, Strahlman I'm speaking of, are probably behind him. He's got a lot of miles on him. And I think he's going to be a helpful player, but I don't think he's the type of guy that you can count on him to be a difference maker. So, but saying all that, I like all of the moves they've made. I think they've, you know, they've done all the things necessary to make the playoffs. Bobrovsky just has to perform, and you know, I gotta believe that he's going to want to show, you know, just the quality of goalie that he is. And I think he'll have a tremendous season. And I think, you know, Quenneville has proven that, you know, he can take a team and, you know, maybe make it, you know, 8 to 12 points better, or maybe even more than it was the previous season. So I look for that team to make the playoffs. I think they, you know, with Bobrovsky in goal, and, you know, like another thing, like people forget it, Aaron Ekblad is only 23 years old. Like, you know, he's still scratching the surface of his ability, and I think people thought he would even be a more have more dramatic impact than he's had. But I think it's still possible that he'll have that. And, of course, Barkov, everybody around the National Hockey League knows that, you know, he is a superstar and all-around player, can pretty much do it all. So I like the team. I'm bullish on it. I like I said, I think they'll make the playoffs. And I think, you know, if you're looking for a sleeper team, that, you know, somebody that could sort of come out of nowhere, I'd say the Panthers are it.
Kevin, the Carolina Hurricanes just continue to make headlines. They obviously traded Justin Falk for Joel Edmondson and were the big surprise in the Eastern Conference last year, getting all the way to the final and then obviously losing to the Boston Bruins. But we know they're going to have a good top line again with Nino Niederreiter, Sebastian Aho, and Andrei Svechnikov. But when you look at that defense on the left side, Jacob Slavin, Jake Gardner, Joel Edmondson, and then you've got Dougie Hamilton, Brett Pesce, and Hayden Fleury there on the right side, are we looking at the best group of defensemen in the entire league?
Well, to me, that's their calling card. Like, I think they're all about, you know, that group of defensemen. And, you know, and even though they've given up Falk, who I liked a lot, you know, I think it's, the team is just as strong. I think Edmondson is, you know, underrated as a defenseman. I think he, you know, can contribute to both offensively and defensively. I think he fits in the way that Roddy Brendamore likes to play. So I like those moves, and I think the offense is good enough, and we know Aho is going to only get better, and Niederreiter seems to have found the right fit for him. So there's a lot to like about this team. I think they're going to miss Furland from last year. He gave them a little bite. They, you know, they sort of fed off his energy a little bit. And I think they'll miss, Justin Williams' leadership as well, but I like this team a lot, but, you know, we're going to be right where we were last year. Is how good is the goaltending going to be? You know, Morathi held up last year. You know, if the goaltending is good, I think the Carolina Hurricanes are a playoff team and certainly will be a factor in the Metropolitan, to be sure.
Well, Kevin, speaking of goaltending, at 37 years of age and entering his 15th season in the National Hockey League, Henrik Lundqvist is, you know, has always been a goalie you can usually count on for 30-plus wins in a season. Last year obviously wasn't a good season for him by his numbers. What leads you to believe that he's kind of recharged the battery and is ready to kind of take the next step with this young Rangers team?
Well, what gives me reason to believe that is he told me. I had a chance to talk to him at the NHL media tour, and he basically told me a story about how mentally fatigued he was by the end of last season. But this summer, he watched all the moves, and he basically told me he was simply re-energized, and he just felt, you know, he wants to be a part of this sort of new-look Rangers team, and he's excited about Trouba and Adam Fox and the young defensemen that they have, and the fact that the Rangers, who announced a rebuild not all that long ago, you know, went out and, you know, signed Panarin. And so, you know, I think he's excited again, and I think he feels younger. And he told me that, you know, 4 years ago he decided he was going to play lighter. He went from 200 pounds, which is what he normally played at for a lot of years, and now he's playing between 180 and 185, depending on, you know, what month of the season it is. And he just thinks he's ready. And he said to he doesn't think the age has slowed him down any. He thinks it's just a matter of the way the game's being played now. He doesn't think that goalies should play as many games as it used to. I mean, this is a guy who used to play 70 games. And I think now, like, 55 is probably the right number for most goalies, given the level of competition and the intensity of the competition. So I think he's still among the top goalies in the league. I do. I think he's in the top five or six with his level of consistency and kind of the aura that he brings to his team. I think that he gives his team a lot of confidence. And with the moves they've made, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. But again, I can't rule it out. Like in that division, I think pretty much anything is possible. And with the moves they've made, who knows if they, if Adam Fox steps in and plays at a higher level, certainly Trouba is going to stabilize that defense. This could be a different team. Where's D'Angelo going to be in terms of his development? So there's a lot to like about the Rangers, to be sure.
Kevin Allen of USA Today is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Kevin, a couple more questions for you. The New York Islanders, they were a surprise team last year, especially after losing John Tavares. Can Barry Trotz work his magic and get that team back to the playoffs for a second consecutive season?
Well, I believe greatly in Barry Trotz. I think he is among the top coaches in the league. If I think most coaches can make teams, a good coach is 8-12. I think Barry can make the team, 15 points better. That's how much I believe in him. Who I don't believe in necessarily is Semyon Varlamov.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have to prove that he's the guy. If Robin Leonard was back with the Islanders, with the way he performed last year, I would have them projected solidly in the playoffs. I like that team, there's a lot of talent up front. Getting Anders Lee to come back was important. They've got Barzal, who's a very dynamic player. They're going to score some goals, and Trotz demands that they play better defensively. But, I got to see where their goaltending is at. If he's good, if he's on his game, if he's playing at a high level, Islanders are going to be very good. If he's not, I think they're going to struggle. I think you have to have, in that division the way it is now, you've got to have above average goaltending.
Last question for you, Eric. It's the cliche question that we always end our interview with.
Hold on, is it for Kevin or is it for Eric?
Sorry, I meant Kevin. We had Eric DeHatchik on earlier. I'm getting a little confused here. Kevin, who's coming out of the East? Who's coming out of the West? And who's going to win Lord Stanley's Cup?
Well, I don't have to make my decision until next week, so you're kind of putting me on the spot. I don't have to decide until Tuesday night.
You can hedge,
but I've said that I think Tampa is still going to be in the mix in the East, and I think the Capitals and my surprise team in the West, I'm going with a bit of a sleeper. Nobody's talking about them, but I'm going with the Vegas Golden Knights to get back to the final. I think I'm going to pick, I'm not positive this, but right now I'm leaning toward picking Tampa to exercise their demons and win the Stanley Cup this season.
Kevin Allen of USA Today. Kevin, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks so much for joining us as part of our season preview show.
All right, sounds good. See you later.
Take care, Kevin. Thanks again. When we come back, one final division. It's the Metropolitan Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Reminder, tomorrow afternoon, the Jets in the Wild, the final preseason game from St. Paul, Minnesota, gets started for real on Thursday night. The Jets into New York. They're on Broadway to play against the New York Rangers in Madison Square Garden.
And if you're planning on going to check out the Jets practice today at the Iceplex, they're skating at 12:30, not at 1 p.m.
There you go. A quick scheduling change for the Jets practice. 12:30 at the Iceplex for one of the final times as part of training camp. In fact, this will be the final skate at the Iceplex as part of training camp before tomorrow's game. And then, of course, the start of the regular season where they'll cut down their roster and get their full 23-man roster ahead of the start of the season. Final division we have to talk about is the Metropolitan Division. Last year, it sent five teams to the playoffs. The Capitals, the Islanders, the Penguins, the Hurricanes, and the Blue Jackets. A lot of upheaval in that division. We know that the Islanders lose Robin Leonard, who was a key player for them. We know the Blue Jackets, well, they lose everybody. Bobrovsky, Panarin, Duchesne, and Dzingel. The Metropolitan Division, to me, is a division that's in a little bit of a state of flux regarding as to who their upper echelon teams are, and if they're true contenders in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I don't know right now if you could say that there's a clear-cut favorite to win the Metropolitan Division, right? Like there is in the Atlantic. Mm-hmm. Certainly there isn't in the Central Division, but I agree. And, when you're talking about teams like the Washington Capitals and the Pittsburgh Penguins, they've probably taken a step back from where they were when they were winning the Stanley Cups, right? But I still have Washington and Pittsburgh as playoff teams. You just mentioned Columbus, and Columbus, to me, is going to be a really interesting team to watch because, you know, you mentioned all the guys they've lost, and you just can't replace that with the current players that they have in their lineup. Like, Gustav Nyquist is a nice player, you know, good veteran player, and he's going to play on the second line with Alex Wenberg and Oliver Bjorkstrand, and I think that's going to be a good line. And a guy like Alex Texier is going to play on the top line with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Cam Atkinson, and that's going to be a really good line. Dubois, I think, is probably up there with one of the most underrated players in the league. But then you go down the lineup and, you know, you're going to have to get, you know, probably more out of guys like Nick Foligno and Boone Jenner. And, you know, Marco Dano, it looks like, is going to crack the opening night roster there on the fourth line, the team that he used to play for, right? But, you know, that defense is still really good. You know, Zach Werenski has got his new deal. Seth Jones, I think, is a top 10 defenseman in the league. Ryan Murray, David Savard go up and down the list. Marcus Nutavara, good defenseman. But really, it's going to come down to the goaltending, and, you know, it looks like, you know, they're going to start the season off with Korpisalo as their number one goaltender, and then Elvis Merzlikens is going to be their backup there. So, you know, Korpisalo has long been one of the better backups in the league, and I think he's going to be good, but he's never done it for, you know, 50 to 55 games. It's always been Bobrovsky there, you know, since he's been an NHL goaltender. So Columbus, to me, is the team that's going to fall out. But when you're talking about, you know, the other teams that made the playoffs last year in that division, I still think the Islanders are going to be a playoff team this year, Drew. I realize that, you know, Leonard had a great year, but, you know, I disagree a little bit with Kevin Allen. I'm not as worried about Semyon Varlamov. I don't necessarily know that Varlamov is going to be able to play 60 games, but I think he can give you, you know, a solid 45 to 50 games, and I think the goaltending is going to be fine there. So I still have those three teams, and the team for me that's going to make the playoffs in place of Columbus is the Rangers. I'm really high on the Rangers, and I realize that, you know, last year they were only a 78-point team, but I think overall that division is going to be tighter, and I think you're probably only going to need maybe 94 or 95 points. I don't think you're going to need 98 or 99 points to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, you have nine teams making the playoffs right now from the Eastern Conference, though.
No, I had Tampa Bay, Boston, Toronto, Florida.
Right, and then so who are your four teams from the East?
I have Metro, Washington, Pittsburgh, Islanders, Rangers.
So you don't have Carolina making it?
I don't.
Okay, sorry. That's where I got confused.
You went by
there.
Default. You assumed he had.
I assumed he had Carolina in there as well. My apologies. So you have both Columbus and Carolina dropping out as playoff teams in the Metropolitan. Then you have the Rangers.
And that's. I mean, I think Carolina is going to be. And also, you know, you throw in Philadelphia and you throw in the Devils. And that's what I'm talking about. The Metropolitan Division, I think, overall is going to be more competitive because the Flyers got better. The Devils got better. Mm-hmm. The Blue Jackets are really the only team that got worse.
I think the Islanders got worse. I mean, I don't think Semyon Varlamov is the answer in goal. I think.
Yeah, but the drop off, Drew, that's what I'm talking about. The drop off, I think it's
more significant than you're giving credit for, which is, you know, obviously a difference of opinion, which is perfectly fine. I think Lou Lamoriello there got, you know, petulant in his negotiations with Leonard, and it's going to cost the Islanders a playoff spot in my books, and it's actually going to gain the Blackhawks a playoff spot, you know, in the Western Conference where Leonard landed there. So, I mean, I think the Islanders, I don't have them as a playoff team, but we'll get to my pick shortly, Dave. Who do you have coming out of the Metropolitan? How do you see that division sort of shaking out this season?
Well, I think Carolina, because of all their depth, I think they're going to still be in the playoffs. I think you've got Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh is a team that, you know, there's still some question marks around it. You know, they're getting older, so to me,
looks like Jack Johnson's going to be a healthy scratch to start the season.
Well, that was a bad contract the day they signed it.
You know, to me, Pittsburgh is a team I look at and I think to myself, are they on the downward spiral? Are they on the are they one of those teams that you could count out? I don't, because of Crosby. I keep them in there, but, you know, and Malkin. But, you know, Pittsburgh to me is maybe 1 year away from being that team that we're talking about is no longer in the playoffs as they maybe go to some sort of rebuild. So I've got Washington, I've got Pittsburgh, I've got Carolina. And right now, I still got the Islanders. I'm with more on Drew's side in terms of the goaltending, but I think that, you know, you've got an amazing coach. You've still got some very good pieces in that team. But I wouldn't be shocked, again, this is a small hedge, if one of Florida or Montreal push to take that eighth spot and knocks this the Metro down to maybe three.
I have the Metro at three playoff teams for this coming season. I think it's Washington, Pittsburgh, and Carolina. Mm-hmm. I think the Hurricanes, I mean, I don't think they're going to be as magical or surprise as many people as they did last season, but I think that that defense is still a very good defense, and Sebastian Aho is a tremendous player. Washington, Pittsburgh, and Carolina for me, I think the Islanders are going to take a step back. I think Columbus is clearly going to take a step back, and I don't think Philly, the Rangers, and the Devils are quite ready, although if any of those teams I think could do it, I think it would be the Rangers. Stanley Cup Finals, Eastern Conference champion, Stanley Cup winner, Western Conference champion. Dave, I'll start with you.
You want the whole thing?
Sure.
Okay, I'll go. I like the Dallas Stars. I think they're going to be aggressive. I think they know that their window is right now. So I've got Dallas going for the West. I'm going to go really off the board and go Tampa in the East. And I think Tampa is going to win the Stanley Cup.
Fair enough. Dave's got the Lightning hoisting it. You can't go. It seems like a good pick until they blow out in the first round again. Ezzy?
I think we all should probably just spin a 31-team wheel right now. Like, it's so hard to predict the Stanley Cup these days. Like, it's been hard for several years, but it seems like the last two or three years it's even harder. You know what? For my Stanley Cup final, I'm going to go with Vegas versus Boston. And I think you could easily pick Tampa Bay. You could probably, you know, pick many teams in each conference, but I'm going Vegas and Boston. I think, you know, Boston, when it comes to the playoffs, just seems to always be there. And, you know, Vegas, when you have, you know, Paul Stastny and you have Mark Stone on and Max Pacioretty on your second line, that's a first line on most teams. And I just, you know,
Which one's winning it?
I'm going to say Boston. I'm going to take Boston to win the Stanley Cup. They came close last year, and I think, you know, I'm not biased. I'm not a Boston fan, but I'm just going to go with the Bruins.
I have Tampa Bay and Vegas in my Stanley Cup final, and I have the Lightning winning the Stanley Cup. Finally, I think they're going to overcome last year's defeat in the first round and end up winning it.
So first round sweep again.
Basically is what I'm saying. Thanks to everybody who listened to today's program and joined us. Of course, Jason Bell was back in hour number one talking about the Jets. We had Eric DeHatchik of The Athletic and Kevin Allen of USA Today. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's available on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's anywhere you get your podcast. Subscribe, rate, review us, let us know what you think. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Great job behind the board today for producer Chris Curry. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.